This is BBC Radio 3, and it's time now for our Drama on 3. 20 years ago tonight, a North Sea oil platform, Piper Alpha, was destroyed in what would become the world's worst oil industry disaster. Our Drama on 3 is Piper Alpha. It tells the story of the tragedy that began just after 10 o'clock in the evening and then unfolded relentlessly over the next hour and a half. You'll hear the events of that night as they happened 20 years ago to the very minute. It was the detail of what happened and the decisions taken during those 90 minutes that captured the imagination of the play's author, and he's Stephen Phelps.
I suppose it was the images that first made such an impression, and the scale. The flames towering above the platform on those spectacular photographs that simply dwarf the rig. And then to realise the size of Piper Alpha itself, over 200 feet high, with its helicopter landing deck higher than Nelson's Column, and even the lowest of its working decks over 70 feet above the water, and it's being swallowed up in flame. And that's when you realise the nightmare it must have been for the men on board. A cameraman on one of the helicopters that took off from the mainland told me that as they lifted into the night sky, they could already see a faint orange glow in the distance, and they were still over 100 miles from the fire. But it was when I began to look into the detail that the story became even more incredible, because I soon found out that it wasn't a single explosion, but rather an escalating disaster that unfolded over at least an hour and a half, with a series of explosions, each bigger than the last. And remember, this huge structure was packed with complex machinery for the extraction and pumping of both oil and gas. And it was a sort of Clapham Junction of the North Sea, too, handling oil and gas from two or three nearby platforms before routing the whole lot to the shore. In fact, something like 10% of Britain's oil and gas production was going through this platform alone. Not the sort of place you'd want explosions and fire, really. And the more I looked into it, the more I realised that people didn't really understand the complex pathology of this disaster, and that the individual stories deserved to be brought alive so people could understand what really happened. And what made this possible was Lord Cullen's public inquiry, with its 180 days of evidence from survivors and others caught up in the tragedy. This has been the basic source material for my play, chronicling the disaster minute by minute as it happened, 20 years ago to the day. 20 years ago to the minute, in fact.
I'm on the production deck.
Where's Bob?
Yeah, a JCP alarm. Looks like the flash drum's knocked out.
We'll have to get A-pump going again.
I'm going to Solicitron.
The light stayed on, though. I can't... It won't acknowledge.
We'll have to sign those permit to work tags off, Jeff.
Where's Bob?
He's down there already.
In the minutes leading up to 10 o'clock, on the evening of the 6th of July, 1988, the Piper Alpha disaster has already begun to unfold.
Shit. Now there's a leak. I've got a gas alarm in C module. Low-level gas, zone 3. And one of the centrifugal compressors has tripped. That's two gone now.
In the control room of the oil production platform, more than 100 miles from the nearest land, the engineers in charge are struggling to retain control.
We're going to lose the turbines. Can we get them onto diesel?
They're on auto-switch.
Well, that's no guarantee. We can't risk a black start. Way too bloody expensive.
Another gas detector. That's the third compressor. Now we're really in the shit.
Isn't he there yet? For Christ's sake, try the radio again.
Where are you? Have you got to the pumps yet?
And with light to moderate southerly winds and temperatures in the mid to late 60s, it should be a pleasant night.
Bloody flare.
I've never heard it so noisy. Did I miss a sport?
Aye, they're lost.
What the hell is that?
Welcome to Piper Alpha, mate.
This is Callum Alexander with the 10 o'clock news.
Can you hear me? You'll have to shout. They've all gone down. Oh, C module east, I think. I don't know. I'll have a look.
Oh, Jesus. Oh, Christ. Jeff, you okay?
I'm fine, I think. Where are you?
Oh, shit. It's
supposed to be bloody emergency lighting, isn't there?
That was sea module, wasn't it? You feel that rush of air? It was cold.
Bob Vernon's already down there. Must have been in the middle of it.
And the bloke with the radio. Oh, God.
All the telemetry's out. Phones too.
Mayday, mayday. This is MV Lowland Cavalier standing off Piper Alpha. Explosion and fire on oil production platform Piper Alpha, situated 58 degrees 28 minutes north, 15 degrees 36 minutes east. Mayday, mayday, all vessels. Silver Pit launching fast rescue craft. Lowland Cavalier to Tharos. This is Lowland Cavalier to Tharos.
I can't get this bloody door open.
There's something blocking it.
In cabin B1 of Piper Alpha's accommodation block, high above the drilling deck, Ian Fowler and his cabin mate have been plunged into darkness.
I know, but I can't see. Oh, oh, that's better. Christ, what a mess.
Don't touch that. It's hanging off the wall. Look here.
Let's get this cap shifted first.
Can you feel the floor lift? It felt like about a foot.
Okay. That's it. What now?
Yeah, you got up top to the galley. They'll get you up to the helideck when the chopper's coming. That's the drill. I'll see you up there.
Where are you going?
Fire team mate muster in the mech shop down on 83 foot level.
Yeah, but going down doesn't seem like a good idea.
Aye, well, someone's got to do it. Anyway, there's not been a fire alarm. Has there?
Stand clear there!
400 metres or so from the platform, standby vessel, the Silver Pit, a converted trawler, rolls lazily in calm seas. The crew are trying to launch the ship's Zodiac, an inflatable FRC, a fast rescue craft.
Bloody hell, do you see that?
Give me a hand here.
Like a blow flash, under the production deck.
We've still got the divers down. There'll be crew down there on the dive skid. We can get him right under the rig. Maybe we can pick up some of the dive crew.
In a rubber boat?
My choice, mate.
Aye. Come on.
There's oil, though, too. Look. Burning oil spilling off the deck.
Abandon dive. Return immediately to surface.
What's the problem?
Abandon dive.
I'm nearly done.
Return immediately to surface.
I heard a thump. Two flashes. White flashes. Is it...
Abandon dive. Return immediately to surface.
Can't work out whether this PA system's buggered like everything else. What's going on out there?
In the radio room, Piper Alpha's link to the outside world, radio operator David Kinraid, has been joined by OIM Colin Seaton, the offshore installation manager in charge of the platform.
I don't know. It's all on fire down below.
Where? Drill deck?
Below, I think. Gas module, production deck. You better send a mayday and get yourself a survival suit when you're done. I'm going to take another look. And get the Oxy HQ on the phone.
You're kidding. It's blown clean off the wall.
Well, get the media out. Well, you can. I'm going to go and see where I can get to.
What shall I say? The Mayday!
Occidental, night security.
110 miles away, on the beach, the offshore industry's universal term for the mainland, Occidental Oil received their first intimation that something is wrong.
Oxy HQ, we have a major emergency. Repeat, major emergency in Piper Field. This is a Tharos semi-submersible standing off Piper Alpha production platform. There's been an explosion on Piper Alpha. Looks like there might be an evacuation. Please inform Grampian Police and Maritime Rescue Coordination Centre.
By chance, the Tharos, a smaller movable platform, is positioned close by. Its primary purpose is to fight fires and provide support and hospital facilities during an offshore emergency. A 62-foot extendable bridge is designed to assist evacuation. Its water cannon can pump 33,000 gallons of water per minute over a distance of 75 metres. At the present time, Tharos is anchored some 500 metres off Piper Alpha. She has already initiated the process of paying out her anchors to move closer. It will prove painfully slow.
Radio room to control, do you read me?
Nothing.
Repeat, do you read me?
There's no way down. It's full of smoke.
What is?
Stairwell. It's full of smoke. Black smoke. Oh, flames too.
Christ, look, look, we'll have to use the escape hatch.
Right.
Get one of these up. Both of you.
No, I can't.
I've done it before.
Come on, man.
Life jacket over a survival suit. I've done it.
Send another Mayday. Abandoning ship. We're abandoning the platform.
Right. Mayday, Mayday. Explosion and fire on the oil rig, on the platform, and we'll... Abandoning the rig.
There! Look! There's someone at the bottom of B-Leg!
The Silver Pits FRC is making the first of many trips towards the dangerous waters around the huge legs supporting the platform. The massive structure looms overhead, parts of it now burning fiercely. As the disaster unfolds, falling debris will be just one of the many hazards they face.
There, on the boat bumper. Got him. Jesus!
Here! Help me! Over here!
Mayday, Mayday. We require any assistance available. Any assistance available. We've had an explosion and... A very big explosion and fire. The radio room is very badly damaged.
Who's that? You were with the drilling crew.
Borden. We're looking for the rest of the Borden men.
With night falling fast, most of the 226 men on board a platform packed to capacity are already inside their accommodation block. Many are already out in the cramped stairwells. Among them, Ian Fowler, trying to make his way down to the muster station for his fire team.
Carry on, mate. Get up top, you'll find them in the galley. Can you get through down there?
No way. It's choking down there.
Well, try that door.
The flames outside here.
Get for Christ's sake, shut it. You'll live more smoke in.
What's happened?
Explosion. Up above. Production deck. A biggie.
Yeah, I can see that.
Oh, get this kid off. Oh, come on.
I've never seen...
Neither have I. Come on, into the chamber.
I'm not sure I want to be in decompression.
Well, get in there. I'll look after you.
Mayday. Mayday, Mayday. We're abandoning the radio room. We're abandoning the radio room. We can't take any more. We're on fire.
Ladies and gentlemen, today, the 19th of January, 1989, marks the opening of part one of my inquiry, the Cullen Inquiry, into the circumstances of the accident on Piper Alpha and its cause. I have been given the responsibility of reporting to the Secretary of State on the circumstances of the accident and its cause, together with any observations and recommendations which I think fit to make with a view to the preservation of life and the avoidance of similar accidents in the future. The design throughput of the platform was 250,000 barrels of oil per day. The platform started production in 1976. Piper was linked by pipelines, three gas and one oil, to three other platforms, MCP-01, some 34 miles from Piper, Claymore, 22 miles from Piper, and by 12 miles of pipeline to Tartan. Oil from the field was transported through 128 miles of 30-inch diameter pipeline to Flotter in the Orkneys, and gas via MCP-01 and a further 108 miles of pipeline under high pressure to St. Fergus near Aberdeen.
This is Tartan Platform calling Claymore. Tartan calling Claymore, do you read me? Tartan calling the Claymore Platform, do you read me? Do you have contact with Piper Alpha platform? Do you have any information about situation on Piper Alpha? Do you read me? Over.
Why these comms are like to be routed through Piper's beyond me.
Claymore, do you read me? What the hell's going on over there?
Look at the telemetry, mate. Look, here. All seems stable.
Well, it looks like they're still producing now.
They must be getting it under control.
This slide shows the Piper field location, my lord. It's approximately 110 miles northeast of Aberdeen. The approximate area that the field covers, the total area, is bounded by a rectangle of about 4 miles by 5 miles. The actual reservoir size is about 7,600 acres, or about 12 square miles. The reservoir has a vertical depth of 8,000 foot and is 200 foot thick. The initial reservoir pressure was 3,700 psi. To relate that to something, that is over 100 times what you inflate your automobile tires to.
And the platform itself?
The North Sea maximum storm design wave is 95 feet high. Also, the design wind condition that these structures are designed to in the Piper case is 117 miles per hour.
Do I understand that the design had to withstand a wave of that height and having that force?
That is correct. This required a jacket structure of about 14,300 tons of steel. Again, hard to visualize, but this is the weight equivalent of about 10,000 ordinary automobiles.
Hmm. And when we're talking about anybody who is in any of the production modules A, B, C, or D, he is at the 83-foot level, is that right?
Yes, that is the floor of the production modules referred to as the 83-foot level.
The living quarters west was mounted on top of its associated diesel module.
With the helideck on top of that.
So the helideck was at the level of 175 feet, is that right?
Yes, sir, that is correct. With the reception area directly beneath, right alongside the galley.
Get in here, quick! Hey, no. Get a towel over your face like this! No, you've got to get it wet and keep checking those cabins.
Right.
Anyone in there? We've got to get everyone up to reception, into reception and the galley.
Is that right, Mr. Walker? There's a flame right up the side of the block.
Shut that door. You're letting more smoke in.
It's buckled at once.
Right, follow me.
Barros heli lifting off, 22:12 hours. Jesus, look at that smoke.
That's an oil fire, that's for sure.
Smoke drifting across the platform is obscuring the view from Tharos as she edges slowly towards Piper Alpha.
Tharos to heli, what can you see?
Huge plume of smoke. Dense black smoke. Coming from the southeast corner, blowing right across the platform.
On board Tharos, efforts to start the water cannon are proving difficult. Opening them too early has caused a lack of pressure. This will later be judged to have caused a 12-minute delay in bringing them into action.
Anybody in the water? Any lifeboats?
You're kidding. They're all on the north face, same place as the helideck, covered in smoke.
They've got no chance.
Can you get in anywhere else? Anywhere at all?
No way. You can't even see the helideck.
Well, it makes any difference without a bloody winch.
Is this it? Is this the galley? I can't see a bloody thing.
Andy?
Bob? Bob, where the hell are you?
I've got a fish tank. Where are you?
Main door.
Come left. About 10 feet. Yeah, look, we're tail dipping. Join the queue, mate.
Always knew there'd be a point to this bloody fish tank.
Oh, is this all the drinks machine? Well, I don't fancy a Coke shower.
There's everyone.
They're coming in drips and drabs. Jim's trying to make radio contact, find out what to do.
They're supposed to be here. That's the emergency drill.
Now we can't get to the bloody lifeboats in this anyway.
Approximately 10 miles from the deteriorating situation on Piper, the OIM of Tartan, the neighbouring Texaco platform, is trying to make contact with his counterpart on Claymore, the third of the interconnected platforms.
Any contact with Claymore?
Nothing. And everything seems to be out on Piper.
Anything on pressures? Oil steady at 470. And looks like she's still pumping. Gas pressure up to 1750 psi, though, and rising.
Well, it's 200 up already. That's a hell of a lot of pressurised gas in 12 miles of line.
Not looking good.
Who's the OIM on Claymore? Any signs of shutting down?
Make a bit of space there, there's more arriving. Come over here by the drinks machine.
Back on Piper, the galley and reception area is beginning to fill up with men. They're arriving in the expectation of helicopters coming to lift them off the platform from the helipad, just above them, on the very top of the accommodation block. So far, the fire deluge system has failed to activate.
That's it! Follow his voice. Keep your towels on your faces or whatever you've got. Water here in the fish tank.
Oh, these lights can't see anything anyway.
Steady now, keep calm.
You'd think when they spent $1 billion on this crate, the emergency lights might have lasted more than 15 minutes.
Bobby!
Bob!
Come here. Hey, you're fire crew, aren't you?
Not as much use with sod all coming out of the hoses. And what the hell's happened to the deluge system?
Well, his diver's down, so it's on manual.
Oh, that's great. The switches are on the pumps, aren't they?
Listen, there's a couple of BA sets in reception. If we could get down there...
Okay. Okay, I'll give it a go. But I'm not sure it's breathing apparatus we need.
Let's go. Told you I wouldn't leave you there.
But I won't be decompressed.
Well, you'll have to live with it. We've got to get off this rig. Look, up above.
Jeez, when did that happen?
Run, follow me.
Oh, God, look
out!
There's a rope at the northwest corner. Some of the guys are down there already, in the drink. We might be able to get there.
Who's going
to
pick us up?
There are Zodiacs flying about, and the Cavalier just launched her workboat.
Where are you going?
Northwest corner. Come on!
Well, that'll take us right under the bloody fire!
There's no choice!
Hello, Tharos. No, this is Jim Davidson. Mr. Sandlin's here behind me.
22 miles away in the radio room of the Claymore platform, the operations superintendent and his OIM are in contact with the Tharos, now edging its way slowly in towards Piper Alpha.
What can you tell us, Tharos? Did you say B or C module? The fire's in B module. Or C? B and C? No, I've been up top when we first heard, but it was too hazy. What? Look, he says we'd definitely be able to see it now.
What are the pressures? Is the Spectrotech still out?
Aye, the telemetry's down.
Hang on.
Yes? Yes? Okay. Tharos have launched their chopper, but he can't... The smoke's all across the helideck and getting worse. Aye. Okay, 5 minutes. Look, there's no telemetry, but our oil pressure readings are down to 470.
Well, they must have shut down, then.
What?
They must have initiated an emergency shutdown.
What if they haven't? Our pressure drop could mean we're pumping oil back down the line to Piper. Look, shouldn't we shut down?
It's up to them. The policy is quite clear. It's for the individual platform to decide how to deal with it. And with the comms out, we can't talk to them anyway, so how can we know what's best to do?
Mr. Sandlin, on that first conversation between you and Mr. Davidson, am I right in thinking that Mr. Davidson suggested that production be shut down on Claymore?
He did.
Your response to that was what?
We monitored the pressure on both the pipelines, and my decision was that the situation in the pipelines was stable. Therefore, we would continue production until we either heard otherwise from Piper or elsewhere that there was a need for shutdown at that moment.
At that stage, you had been trying for perhaps 10 minutes, perhaps more, to contact Piper, is that correct?
I had not been on the phone that long to try and establish communication with Piper, but possibly in a period spanning 10 minutes, I had tried to establish contact with him.
You had failed to contact Piper?
Yes.
Did that cause you to be reassured, or were you further concerned?
I was not concerned at that moment.
Why not?
The platforms have the facility to isolate themselves from the communication system, thereby, in an emergency situation, allowing no calls out other than those controlled by the OIM.
Had you sought to get into contact with the OIM on Piper?
I had.
And you had failed?
I had.
Is one of the vital aspects of dealing with any emergency situation the maintaining of communication between yourselves and the stricken platform?
Yes.
But that, you indicate, was denied to you, and yet you were not concerned.
I was not.
Get down, man. It's better on the floor. Get off me, for Christ's sake.
Sorry, mate.
You?
25-year-old Mark Reed is a contract worker. Like many others on the platform, he's trying to find his workmates.
Yeah, through the kitchen.
No way. Harry Calder went. I'm Fowler with him. I told him they were mad. We've got to try and get up to the helideck. No chance.
Who's that?
Who the hell's in charge here? I mean, what are you supposed to be doing? Just wait, man. Hang on, they'll get us off.
Sod that. We've already tried doing what we're supposed to do.
Lifeboats.
Can't get near them.
I mean, either.
They were smashing windows down on A deck. Still couldn't get to them.
Is anyone else here from Borden drilling?
Just smoke and flames pouring in.
Borden! Is anyone here from Borden?
What do you want those lazy swords for?
Don't I die me own.
Over here!
Is that you? Where's Osh?
It's Jonesy!
Kinloss, come in, Kinloss. This is Rescue Coordination Centre Put Reavy. Do you read me, RAF Kinloss?
Reading you, Put Reavy. Over.
Urgent requirement for Nimrod coordination. Major emergency, Piper Field.
Roger, major emergency, Piper Field.
How quickly can she be airborne?
She's a one-hour standby, but I think we can beat that.
Oh, Roger Kinloss, thank you.
Roy! Is that you?
Who's that?
It's Bob. Bob Vernon.
Where'd you get that breathing kit?
Fire team. Me and Robbie here. We're the lucky ones.
Too bloody right.
We're going to try and get up to the fire pumps. Get them started.
What are you doing down here?
Now I threw up top.
Good luck, mate. How are we going to get out of here, though?
Follow me. There's a rope down on the beacon platform.
Cross there. I'll choke to death.
Take it.
And I'm not going down 70 feet of rope.
Take it. The towel.
Towel?
Your face, Roy. Wrap it round your face. I'll lead you across. Breathe through the towel and hang on to me. Honest, mate. We'll get you through.
Bob Vernon and Robbie Carroll are taking Roy Carey towards a small navigation platform at the northwest corner, more than 50 feet above the waves. It is one of the few places from which men will safely escape the platform.
Oh, shit! This stuff's active. What's burning here?
The towel, man. Breathe through the towel.
Let me out. I can't stand this.
100 feet above, Mark Reed decides that conditions in the galley are becoming unbearable.
It's a bloody inferno out there.
It's bellowing here to die. Someone said it could be hydrogen sulfide and all this.
And worse.
I've had enough.
Oh, don't... Oh. Where's the bloody OIM? Anyone here got a radio? Oh.
We're here. Jim's got a radio.
Where? Where are you?
Sorry, Silvery.
Ah, mind out, that's my leg in the
air. Sorry, mate.
It's just Alpha Galley. We're in the galley. Over. Can anybody hear me?
Shite, this is useless.
Jim, did you get anyone?
10 minutes ago. Just Robbie Carroll in the control room.
At approximately 10:20, Piper Alpha is rocked by a massive explosion when burning oil causes the rupture of the Tartan riser, the pipeline bringing gas from the Tartan platform. It is the start of a massive and prolonged high-pressure gas fire. Witnesses describe the effect as like a giant Bunsen burner. At this time, only 22 men have managed to escape. 204 are still on the platform.
Bloody hell, did you see that? The sky went bright, just bright orange. It's 10 bloody miles away.
Across unnaturally calm seas, men on the tartan platform see the explosion light up the darkening night sky. With no communication to the stricken platform, Tartan's control staff are unaware that it is their pipeline which has blown. OIM John Leeming tries to make contact with Piper.
I found her dead. Nothing.
Shoreline?
Nothing. Gas pressure?
Well, it's been rising, gradual but steady.
Well, they must have shut down then. Close the safety valve.
We'd better close the feed valve. She's already running abnormally high.
That's already underway, isn't it?
On Piper itself, the explosion of the tartan riser has caused a sharp deterioration of conditions in the galley. Hot, acrid, smoke-filled air makes it almost impossible to breathe. Some men have begun trying to smash the thick glass windows.
For Christ's sake! Get those doors shut!
They're good! The windows are going anyway! The heat!
Get on with it! There's plenty more to come down!
Come on, man.
There's a
blowing stop halfway
down. Okay, you all get off. If everyone keeps calm.
For Christ's sake, that was one of the risers gone. The whole lot's going to go in a minute.
Come on, Bob. Let's go. It's going to get desperate if we don't get up there soon.
Where are you going?
Up. Got to get to the fire pumps.
Well, you can't. It's not up there.
Got to dampen it down somehow. Come on, Bob.
Wearing their breathing apparatus, Bob Vernon and Robbie Carroll leave the beacon platform from which 27 men will eventually escape and climb back up into the burning platform to try to reach the fire pumps. It is the last time they will be seen alive.
Come on! Next! You!
Okay!
Okay.
When you were on the beacon platform, was it your intention to go down the rope as the others had?
Yes, it was indeed, yes.
While you were waiting to go on the rope, did an explosion occur on the platform?
Just as I turned round after removing my life jacket, there was a very massive explosion.
Did that explosion produce a lot of flame?
A great deal of flame. It was a wall of flame, more than anything else, that was rushing straight towards us. I managed to pivot on one foot and bring my back to the flame and crouch down as low as I could. I'd hoped that the flame would pass, but then I was enveloped in the flame and I realised that I was just being burned up. So I grabbed the bottom rail, which was in front of me, and pulled myself through and launched myself off. I hoped then I wouldn't hit anything on the way down. I was also very worried. We'd been trained that if I tried to cause any resistance, you should not really go from that height. So I tried to make as clean a dive as I could. I did not even bend my hands to bring me to the surface very quickly. I kept them very straight and everything in that manner. And it resulted in me going very, very deep.
That led to you going very deep before you resurfaced?
I thought I would not get to the surface at one point.
When you did resurface, what were conditions like on the surface of the sea?
The sea was not ablaze itself, but everything from about 8 feet up seemed to be just an inferno. It was just like being in a grill, under a grill.
The upper parts of the platform are now engulfed in flames, reaching hundreds of feet into the night sky. In the treacherous waters at the foot of the huge platform, the crew of the Silver Pits FRC continue to manoeuvre their craft towards escaping men.
The foot of the leg over there. There's men in the water. And more coming down that rope. Look, that little beacon platform.
Help! Help me!
Bloody hell, you nearly ran him down. Get the bait hook. Here. You okay?
Yeah.
Where'd you come from?
Jumps. Couldn't get up to the lifeboat. The whole production deck's on fire.
10 miles away, Tartan's control room staff still do not know that it is their riser that has ruptured. Their instruments tell them that everything is normal.
Gas pipeline pressure still steady.
Good. Keep an eye on it. Nice horizontal line. That's what we want. Keep it stable.
The pressure dropped quite sharply a few minutes ago, but it's stable now.
The feed valve's definitely shut. 54.
Definitely. There's no more gas going in, but there's none being drawn off. It looks like they've got it under control.
Yes, of course. No, you're the last.
At Occidental's headquarters on shore in Aberdeen, security staff have begun to put their emergency procedures into action.
Okay. Yes, of course. Will do.
In a series of phone calls, key staff and management have been advised of a serious incident on the Piper platform. Production and pipeline manager Jim McAllen arrives shortly after 10:20.
Evening.
Good evening, sir.
Is that the phone out?
Last one, sir. In the Cascade. Have you heard any more, sir?
I was rather hoping you'd have something more for me. Police been informed, of course.
I phoned them as soon as I heard, sir. Quite a while ago. Here we are. 10:08. Would you like a cup of tea, sir?
On board the Silver Pit, the first survivors are beginning to arrive on the vessel's fast rescue craft.
Here they come.
They've been plucked from the northwest corner at the base of one of the platform's four supporting legs.
Looks like they've got some divers on board. Get that gate open.
Lucky bastards. Must have already been in the water when she blew. Oh, it's stuck. The gate. Get the gate open. It's jammed. You'll have to come up with scramble nets.
Jesus. Let's hope we don't get any serious injuries coming in.
Coast Guard.
Grampian Police. Is he there?
Hang on. He's a wee bit tied up. Is it urgent?
Aye, we've had the media on wanting information about Piper.
Well, that's what he's dealing with. He says, can he call you back?
Aye, no problem.
We can't, all right? There's just nothing to show they haven't got it under control.
Have you seen it? You can see it from the helideck. There's an orange glow, for God's sake. Through the haze. It should be black out there, and there's an orange light in the sky.
The worsening situation on Piper is now visible more than 20 miles away from the helicopter landing pad of the Claymore platform. But Claymore's OIM has issued no order to shut down production.
If I thought for 1 minute, if anyone from Piper had seen fit to get hold of us...
We could be feeding the fire. Surely we should at least start to blow down, shut off the oil line.
They're professionals, Jim. The guys over there, they'll have it under control. It's not the first time after all.
Mr. Sandlin, we have a background of 2 Mayday calls and an explosion being reported at about 10 o'clock. The information to the effect that the smoke was precluding helicopter movements by about 10:15, and then the fire spreading and people in the water by 10:30.
Yes.
At that stage, was there a discussion between you and Mr. Davidson, during which Mr. Davidson suggested again that the Claymore production platform be shut down?
At 10:30, yes.
Did he at that stage, or had he prior to that stage, reminded you that there was a risk that the oil and or gas from Claymore lines were feeding the fire at Piper?
We both understood that situation.
Did you treat that as being a real risk?
With the limited information I had at the time, I still thought that the personnel on board the platform were fighting a controllable fire.
Did you consider that there was a real risk of either oil or gas or both feeding back under pressure from Claymore so as to feed a fire on Piper?
Not at that time.
In spite of the fact that your operations superintendent had told you that this was a risk?
Yes.
Did you have any indication at all or any information to the effect that persons were seeking to control the fire?
I did not.
Did you have any information at all from which you could properly conclude that the fire was able to be controlled?
I did not.
In such circumstances, on what basis did you make the decision that the fire was controllable?
I only hoped it was.
The gas pouring from the ruptured tartan riser has now been burning for more than 10 minutes. Conditions outside the galley are so bad that the men still inside are virtually imprisoned. Project Services Supervisor Jim Heggie, one of the most senior men on the platform, has a VHF radio, but is finding it hard to make contact with the outside world.
Pharos, come! Gangway! Hoses! Get him back! Keep trying, for God's sake!
Get down!
Ian Fowler has decided to take his chances and leave the galley.
Just stay low, stay down!
I must stay in here!
Don't open the bloody doors!
No one's coming, mate! We've got to get down, get below the fire! You'll have to get in closer. Here! Come on, here! Sod it, anybody coming? I'm on my way.
Just outside the galley, a number of men are taking shelter behind a metal storage unit, which acts as the fruit and vegetable store. Among them is Mark Reed.
Can you see anything? Sod all.
Mike, you with a torch. Any room behind there?
Move along.
Move!
There's another one trying to get in.
Thanks, mate. What a bloody mess, eh?
Too right.
Never thought the fruit and veg store would come in so handy. What the hell's happened to you?
Pass those tomatoes back, can you? We need them here again.
Right? Tomatoes?
Aye, look, squeeze my lips. Top of your head, keep your face cool.
Oh, bloody hell, I thought, your face...
Not yet.
Oh, Christ.
Eat some. Get some fluid in.
We gotta be all right.
Aye, listen. We're one of these back in 84. They get everyone off rent. So I know now.
An explosion?
And a fire.
Smoke? That's bad. Can't even see your hand, let alone the helideck.
It's up there, mate. And it's the way out of here. You coming?
Memo. May 1984. Onshore Safety Superintendent to Mr. G.F. Folds, Facilities Engineering Department. Subject: how it was versus how it could have been. The successful evacuation in March 1984 was made possible by a number of favourable conditions. These included that the helideck was operational throughout and was not affected by explosion, fire or smoke. Unimpaired ground-to-air communications were maintained throughout. It was daylight and weather conditions were conducive to helicopter operations. There were, fortunately, enough helicopters in the area available and capable of responding to the emergency call. However, if the incident had taken place at 1:30 in the morning, the wind northwesterly, if evacuation by helicopter was impossible, and it does not matter why this might be so, in my opinion, the injuries and risk of loss of life would have been reasonably high.
When you went first on to Piper Alpha, Mr. Ralph, were you given a safety induction training on arrival at the platform?
Not on this occasion, when I arrived there, but I did have one many years ago, about 10 years ago, when I first went to Piper.
Had you any repeat safety induction on arrival at the platform on any of your other tours of duty?
No.
Did you have a view which you wanted to express to the inquiry about the content of training in relation to where you should go when there is a fire?
What I'd been told is make your way to the helideck or evacuate by chopper.
Do you think that is a sensible way to allocate priorities when flames are rising?
No. I thought if I went up, I'd never get down. The flames and smoke were rising. I thought the best way was to make for the 20-foot level where there was no flames or smoke. The flames and smoke were all rising upwards. I thought if I made my way upwards, I'd never get off.
So you really made your escape by disobeying the training that you had. Is that right?
That is correct.
Occidental calling Piper Alpha. Do you read me? This is Occidental Emergency Control Centre calling Piper Alpha. Do you read me?
I'm getting nothing from Claymore either, sir.
Christ, where's MacDonald?
MacDonald.
Our telecoms chap. Someone's got to get these comms up and running again.
Oh, Mr. MacDonald, yes. Arrived a couple of minutes ago, sir. I think he's on the phone to BT looking for backup equipment.
Occidental calling Tartan. Are you reading me? Well, thank goodness he's on to it. We'll just have to get some gear flowing out there.
Oh, God! Oh, God! Oh, God!
Fool, come on! McCorn, he's got his hands locked on.
Let go of the net! Let go, we can't get you on board!
On board the Silver Pit, the survivors now arriving on the FRC are in much worse condition, many having serious burns or blast injuries.
God, help! This bloody swell! You have to prise them off! Give us a hand here!
I'm trying to get this other bloody inflatable started.
Just leave it, it'll be no bloody good anyway. The rubber's blistering already. Hold that Zodiac steady!
Here, I've got him!
Oh, God!
This is madness, dragging injured men at the side. And can somebody try and fix that bloody searchlight?
I think that a great deal more effort might have been made to find better equipment. I think that a cheap method of providing a rescue service was looked at and an adapted sports boat used, because that is what these FRCs are.
You think that they are too vulnerable?
Yes, far too vulnerable.
And you say they are not particularly good for the transfer of injured people. Captain McLean, is that right?
They are simply not suitable for the transfer of injured people. If you have seriously injured people, there's very little room on them. There's nowhere to put any injured person, and there's nowhere for the crew of the rescue boats to move injured people around to get them transferred. Say, onto a supply boat like the Loch Carron.
In the control room of Tartan, production supervisor, Dave Morton, continues to monitor the status of production.
Everything's still okay. It's not looking any better over there.
John, do you think we should be blowing the pipe?
Pipeline pressure's still stable?
Everything holding up, yes. Doesn't seem to be any loss of gas.
Good, good. You're right, though. Can you start getting ready to blow the pipe now? There's an awful lot of gas in there.
So far, the decisions taken on Tartan have shut off the supply of gas to the pipeline. But this 10-mile pipeline still contains gas pressurised to over 1,500 pounds per square inch, which will continue to feed the fire on Piper Alpha until it is blown down to release the pressure.
Coast Guard, can you hold?
Hang on. It's Grampian Police here again.
Oh, sorry. Yes, I didn't. Sorry, it's a wee bit busy here at the moment.
I know. I'm just trying to find out what you know.
What, about the platform?
Aye, exactly.
Well, not much, really. We've had reports of an explosion in Piperfield, Piper A. It's 110 miles northeast of Aberdeen.
Casualties?
None reported. No reports of fire either at this stage. But it looks like they're trying to evacuate, though.
And rescue response underway yet?
Nimrod's been scrambled. Six helicopters, well, at least six. Should be underway in about, inside 20 minutes.
In the radio room of the Claymore platform, and with all normal communications down, the OIM is trying to make contact with Occidental Management in Aberdeen via the platform's solitary satellite phone.
Still not working.
Is that all there is, then? The sat phone?
It's hopeless. I can't round up anyone on the beach.
It's headquarters, for God's sake. They must have someone there by now.
Just not getting through.
Should we just shut down? I mean, we don't know what's going on over there, do we?
Exactly. There's nothing to say they haven't isolated themselves.
What?
To concentrate on fighting the fire.
But even if there's a possibility...
Please. I need to try to get hold of the beach. Find out what they know.
Tomatoes! Pass them down, eh?
They're finished!
Outside the galley, billowing black smoke is making it difficult to breathe. With the Tharos edging slowly closer, Mark Reed, Ian Fowler and Harry Calder are still in their now crowded shelter behind the fruit and vegetable store.
It's no good staying here. We got to try and get down.
You're mad. We got to stay up here. Wait for the choppers.
They'll never get in all this smoke.
Look, it's eased up a bit. Over there, eh?
I'm getting out the way I came in.
Look, there's an emergency ladder over there. Could be a way down to the pipe deck. Who's coming?
I'm in.
And me. Come on then, let's go. You're bloody mad, you lot.
Others, including Mark Reed, decide to take a different route. He climbs up above the galley onto the helideck itself, hoping that water from Tharos's water cannon will soon arrive and that helicopters might be able to follow. When he reaches the helideck, he finds he is not alone. David Kinraid, Piper Alpha's radio operator, who issued the platform's first mayday almost 40 minutes ago, has made the same decision.
Here.
Wife, then! Wife, come on!
Hey, up here!
Hey.
They can't see us either! Not in the smoke!
They've got the water cannon on. If they see us, they'll spray over here!
They'll never! They've done it!
Thank God! Get your face in the water before they move on!
There! Look, the White House! Maybe we can get some shelter.
The White House?
Aye, the tool store, over there!
Having taken the decision to try to get down to the water, a small party of men, including Fowler and Calder, has managed to find a way down to the pipe deck. They are still more than 130 feet above sea level.
There'll be some protection in the White House. It's where they keep the heavy gear.
They are now much closer to the source of the flames. The metal deck structures, gangways and railings are searingly hot. One survivor will later describe it as like standing on top of a boiling kettle.
What, over there? Right across the deck.
If we run the flames, won't it get us?
Oh, we'll never make it.
What else can we bloody do? Come on!
Are they coming?
The helicopters?
You're the radio op, aren't you?
We've sent my dice. They'll come when they can.
What, and put down here? With the catch netting and fire?
We're right on top. It only needs the wind to shift.
No chance. I'm going down again.
Well, don't go back in the galley, for God's sake. The black hole of Calcutta in there!
No way. I've already seen two or three drop dead inside there.
Opening the door to the White House, Calder and Fowler are surprised to find almost 20 men sheltering from the flames. They are lying amongst heavy equipment, which has fallen from its moorings. In the intensely hot air, breathing is becoming ever more difficult.
Ian, down to that table. Yeah, look.
There's some room under there, guys.
Oh, for Christ's sake!
Get in here. Oh, it's so bloody hot. Don't speak. Just... Ian! Keep awake! Come on!
I can't!
Come on! Just jump! Let go of the rope! Can get you all on if you come quick!
By now, several nearby ships have arrived in response to the early maydays. One of them, the MV Sandhaven, has launched its own FRC, which is picking up men from the foot of the platform.
Hold us steady against the bumper. Come on, you'll be all right. Well done. Now, you two, quick, before the whole lot comes down. That's it. Well done. Okay, let's get out of here. Wait! There's two more! We'll hit and go back!
On the pipe deck, a few yards from the White House, another small party of men is desperate to find shelter.
Look out!
Mr. Muck, I thought you'd gone up.
Let's get off the deck. There's more stuff to come down.
I'm not going inside again. It's suicide.
We've got to get out of this heat. What about the White House over there?
That's bloody fireworking!
No choice, man. Come on. Ah, shit! The handle's red hot. Give me that life jacket. Give it! Don't worry, I'll give it back. Bloody useless things, anyway. Bloody hell, what are you lot doing here? Down! Come on!
I can't swim!
Okay, well, just swing down on the rope then. I'll not let you go in. And that's it. Stop! No, stop! I'm caught! We've got ropes tangled on the A-frame. I'll let you clear them.
The explosion of the MCP-01 riser was the biggest yet. It was caused by the rupture of Piper's gas export pipeline containing 34 miles of pressurized gas.
Mr. Reed, you were on the helideck at the time of the explosion consequent upon the MCP-01 riser. And what did that explosion cause you to do?
There was a fireball. A huge fireball. I saw it coming. Across the helideck. There was nowhere to go. I put my hands to my face. They were badly burned. It took a long time.
And what did you then decide to do?
I never decided anything. I just thought I was burning alive, and so I took a run and jumped off the helideck. I never premeditated anything. I just went over to the side and I jumped. When I went into the water, I opened my eyes under the water and I looked up towards the surface. I could see the platform and fire, and when I came back to the surface, I could hear the roaring, and there was another guy in the water and it looked like he was drowning. But we found a line and we pulled on it, and it was attached to a life belt.
A life belt?
From the Tharys, but it was nowhere near the Tharys, but it kept us alive.
And were you then rescued?
Not then, not straight away. We floated for an eternity. The FRCs came and they picked up three bodies, but they didn't see us, so they went away. Then later they came back and cut their engines to listen. And we agreed, as a last effort, we agreed to scream and shout and splash about. And then they saw us.
On board the Silver Pit, now close into the giant platform, the crew rush for cover as the fireball, created by the explosion of the MCP-01 riser, rolls towards them.
Leave it! Get behind the wheelhouse! It's like bloody daylight.
Get behind here. We'll get in.
What's the skipper doing?
Pulling away.
Make room. Pulling away.
Backing off. Look at the bloody paint. It's blistering.
But there's men in the water still.
Better than bloody roasting. I sneak at it for all going to fry.
Bugger it.
I'm going over the side!
Unable to find room behind the wheelhouse, diver Ed Punchard throws himself over the side of the ship into the water, clinging onto a rope as the ship picks up speed.
Hang on to that rope for Christ's sake!
Having escaped the platform unscathed, he will almost drown as the silver pit accelerates away from the platform, dragging him under the water.
Mr. Carson, as second engineer on the silver pit, at some time were you aware of the captain moving her away from the platform?
Yes.
Was that on the occasion of a further explosion having taken place?
Yes, that's correct.
Could you see from where that explosion took place?
It appeared to come from behind the accommodation block.
That would be on the far side of the platform, really, from where you were.
I'm sorry, but I've lost that image from my mind.
When that explosion took place, could you see people actually jumping from the platform into the water?
Yes. Initially, I thought it was debris coming off, but then I spoke to the people who were actually there.
Could you see people actually jumping from the top level of the platform? The helideck level?
It was the helideck that I saw people coming from.
Jesus Christ.
Ah, on my leg. Help me, someone, I'm trapped. Ah!
And on the platform itself, around 20 men sheltering in the White House feel the deck shift beneath their feet as heavy equipment collapses around them. Andy Mockin is trapped by his leg.
We're knackered, there's no way out of this.
I never thought we'd
fit. I can't.
The whole bloody thing's falling down.
At least it'd be cool in the sea, eh?
Harry, shake my hand.
Done.
Just shake my hand, Harry.
I can't get this bloody foot.
Whoever, I mean, if I get out of this...
We're not getting out of this, Harry.
Following the explosion of the MCP-01 riser, the slow collapse of the platform begins, starting at the 68-foot level, and followed moments later by great shifts on the decks above. With 20 men still inside it, the White House suddenly drops 6 feet.
Andy, are you okay?
Aye, my foot's come free, I'm okay.
Mike!
I thought you were up to the heli desk.
No way out! No, not there!
The immediate effects of the explosion are still being felt as the deck outside the White House tears open. Heat coming up from below momentarily lifts the thick black smoke.
Look! Look, I can see right across to the pipe deck. Come on! Let's at least try and get to the edge.
There's no point.
Come on, man. Tell him, Mike.
It's better than staying here.
Okay, honey. Come on. They keep low.
No way.
Get up, Ian. Run.
I can't. My shoes are melting. Don't touch these pipes.
Jump, man. Jump.
Okay, okay. And the cross-line jacket. Hold nose.
We are on fire.
Did you just run from there into the sea, Mr. Jennings, or did you stop?
No, I got to the edge and looked down and thought I'll do the proper thing. Sort of hand across the life jacket and hand over my nose. While I was preparing for that, someone came up behind me and said his feet were on fire and he pushed me. And as I fell, I went in sideways and hit my back on some obstruction and started spinning over in the air. And I thought that, having got away from the platform, I was now going to break my neck when I hit the water.
Do you remember hitting the water?
Yes, I landed on my back in the water.
Did you hit the water with some force?
Oh, yes. I thought it was from about 80 feet originally, but I've been told since it was between 120 and 150 feet I jumped from.
Did the force of you hitting the water knock the breath out of you?
Yes. Fortunately, my life jacket did keep me on my back with my head out of the water.
The explosion at 10:50 had taken place just as the fast rescue craft from the MV Sandhaven was trying to pick men up from the boat bumper at the bottom of the southwest corner of the platform. Of its crew of three, only Ian Leatham will survive.
We were tangled in amongst the rope and line, and everything that had been thrown down from the installation for people to climb down around the outboards of the A-frame, which tangled everything in our stern.
Were efforts then made to try and free the boat from these entanglements?
Yes.
As that was happening, was there a massive explosion on the platform?
There was, sir. The whole place was just engulfed in flames.
Did the blast of that explosion, in fact, throw you out of the boat?
Yes, sir. Initially, I ended up in the water beside the boat, and then when I looked up, there was just fire everywhere.
And were you being burnt, in fact?
I was.
And did you have a life jacket and survival suit on?
Yes, sir, I did.
In fact, was the combination of life jacket and suit keeping you above the surface of the water?
Yes, sir, it was.
At that time, may I take it that you wanted to get underneath the surface of the water?
Yes, that's where I wanted to be. Underneath.
Because of the fire on the surface?
Yes.
Could you see your fast rescue craft at this stage?
It was underneath the installation. It was engulfed in flames.
Did you see fire on the water at this point?
Where the rescue craft was, yes.
The MV Silverpit is Piper Alpha's dedicated standby vessel. Its task is to assist in any platform emergency.
Here! Over here!
Where? Where are you? I can't see!
Here, for Christ's sake! I'm over here!
Someone get up to the bridge! We need some light down here!
37 of the survivors will be rescued by the Silverpit and its FRC. But its facilities will prove woefully inadequate, as its master, Captain Saborn, will later tell the Cullen Inquiry.
Did the Silver Pit itself then start to pick people up from the water?
Yes, we did.
Was it still daylight by this time, Mr. Saborn? Or did it start to get dark?
No, it was dark. Well, it was dark apart from the fire, yes.
Did you have any facilities on the vessel by way of searchlights that you could pick up survivors in the water?
The searchlight didn't work.
Did you have anything else that you used in order to try and help you sighting people in the water?
Yes, we used the oldest lamp.
Is that a signalling lamp?
A signalling lamp, yes.
Did you have any difficulty in manoeuvring the vessel in such a way as to be able to pick people out of the sea?
Yes, at this time we had a problem with the engine.
Prior to the problem with the engine, was there anything in the construction of the boat that made it difficult to pick up survivors?
Just the usual inherent factors for that type of vessel, yes. It was a single-screw ship. It has a very weak bow thruster, which is used for harbour work at the best of times. You are restricted to just one propeller.
That, I take it, would make manoeuvring the ship extremely difficult.
Not extremely difficult. Possible, but not too difficult. Under normal circumstances.
Had you received any training in how to pick people out of the water in circumstances like that?
We usually practice ourselves.
Nimrod 01 to Maritime Rescue. Taxing out for takeoff.
Roger, Nimrod 01.
Setting course 74 degrees east, northeast.
As the RAF Nimrod rumbles towards the runway, unaware of the scale of the incident, the control staff on Claymore have still not yet shut down production. It is almost 1 hour after the initial explosion. The platform continues to deliver oil and gas to Piper.
Gas pressure constant.
At
800 psi. Look, Sam, isn't it time?
Hello? Hello?
Damn. I thought I had a line to the beach then.
Sod the beach, Sam. We can't wait for the beach. We could be feeding the fire. You know that.
Jim, I've got Tharos coming through on VHF.
I'm coming.
We've got to do it, Sam. Hello? Mr. McCallan. Oh, great. I've been trying to get hold of you for...
Jim Davison here.
Yeah. It's just, you know, no firm information. You know, whether Piper was still producing.
All of it?
Yes, I see that now, of course.
Sam?
Yes, of course.
We have to shut down. She's gone up again. Gas, bigger than the last one. Tharos is right underneath it. This flame's 500 feet high. They've had to pull back. We must shut down!
Okay, okay. We better start a shutdown. Mr. McCallan?
Do you recall receiving a message from someone close by the scene on Piper, indicating that there was a fierce fire burning in the area of the pipeline from Claymore to Piper?
I don't recall having received it. But if there's an indication in our log of it being received, then it was.
We have heard from Mr. Davidson that in the course of a telephone call between you and the shore, he received information to say that there had been a massive explosion on Piper. Do you recall that being conveyed to you? Was a method of communication by way of a shout from Mr. Davidson aimed at the gentleman on the shore to whom you were talking?
Mr. Davidson shouted the information to be overheard over the noise in the room, and I heard it quite clearly. I conveyed that information to Mr. McCallan, whom I was speaking to at the time, and the decision was made immediately to shut down.
Do I take it from that, that there had been no decision to shut down until the information came to you of this massive explosion on Piper?
Yes.
Mr. McCallan, can I ask you to tell us in your own words what the nature of the first conversation with Mr. Sandlin covered?
Just basically what he knew of the situation from his end.
And he would tell you then there was a very serious occurrence on Piper and such details as he knew of that. At some stage, as we understand from your statement, the question of production on Claymore arose. Can you tell me how that was initiated?
I asked him straight out, what is the production on Claymore? What's happening to the pipelines?
Did he make any reply to that?
He said he was still online.
What was your reaction to that?
I immediately told him to shut down and start depressurising the Claymore to Piper gas line.
What was your reaction to his reply to the effect that Claymore was still producing and online?
A certain degree of anger.
Yes, yes, McCallan. I spoke to him a few minutes ago. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. All right. Tartan have already started shutting down their oil wells. They estimate about 45 to 50 minutes to completion.
A control shutdown?
Of course. I'd do the same. Well, we are doing the same. It's just too risky, an emergency shutdown. Well, nobody's going to thank us if we end up with a black start.
What about the gas line?
Depressurization well underway, apparently. About 20 minutes ago, something like that. At least that's when they started the ball rolling. How's ours going?
Instructed 5 minutes ago. Should be set up any minute now.
That's it, then. Not much more we can do right now.
Not now, there isn't.
Everything in place, Mr. McCallum.
Good. Can you try and round up Texaco for me? I need to talk to them urgently about Tartan.
Jim McCallum and other key members of Occidental Management at Aberdeen are now fully operational in their designated role as Emergency Response Centre.
OK, situation report. We've just been on to the Maritime Rescue Coordination Centre. We've told them what we know so far. Approximately 220 men on board, that some people we know are in the water, but that it's not been possible to evacuate all personnel at this time. Ah, Mr. McDonald, are we getting anywhere?
We've got a satellite link to Tharos, but all normal communication to Claymore and Piper is down.
We'll keep the Tharos link open and clear. That's the one solid thing we've got.
It looks like it's the only link at the moment. To the scene itself, I mean.
I've just been through to Sam Sandlin and Claymore on the sat phone.
Can they reach Piper?
Nothing. They don't seem to have a clue what's going on over there. I told them to get on to Tartan and tell them to shut down. I couldn't believe it. They hadn't had a single communication with Tartan since all this started. I told them, shut down Claymore, get Tartan to shut down, and have instructed depressurisation at MCP-01. I can't understand why...
Texaco on the phone, sir.
I know Tartan's a different bloody operator, but there are procedures in place. But thanks, I'll take it.
What do they think we've been doing, sitting on our arses?
Who's that?
Claymore, telling me to depressurise the gas line to Piper. Well, telling me the beach told him to tell me at any rate.
Mr. Morton, didn't you tell him it started nearly 40 minutes ago?
And I told him it's almost complete.
Mr. McCallan, were you aware of the results of an audit on preventative maintenance on the platform, which was carried out in the latter part of 1987?
Yes, I was.
Did the results of that audit indicate that your confidence in safety on the platform was justified?
There was some criticism levelled against the actual planned maintenance system, but in my discussions with the auditors, they did not have any major concerns.
Would you look, please, at the final report of the audit committee, which I think is at page 665. Do you have that?
Yes.
The report itself is dated, I think, late March 1988. We see that they deal first with maintenance, and they find that preventative maintenance on platform equipment has not always been performed in accordance with established schedules. Can I ask you first if that would be the established schedules as updated from time to time, with the dates being extended, were thought appropriate by your staff?
You could say that.
That would be right, would it?
Yes.
Then one sees the findings that 53% of instances were discovered from the random sampling exercise where scheduled preventative maintenance work had not been completed or had been delayed by two or more months, presumably beyond the scheduled period.
Right.
When you received the report to the effect that more than half the preventative maintenance had not been done or had been delayed by two or more months beyond schedule, what was your reaction?
I was concerned about it to a degree, and I spoke to my senior maintenance superintendent about it.
15 minutes after the last big explosion, the Silver Pits FRC is circling beneath the platform in a desperate search for survivors.
How many you got?
Two on board, one's bad.
Only two?
You can't see them. Everything's orange. There's flames everywhere from the platform, and there's burning oil on the sea.
Are they bad?
Everything's bloody orange. You can't see the life jackets. It's mad. And anyway, where are all the solid lifeboats?
Are they bad?
This one might be dead. And the other one's got his clothes all burnt off. How the hell are we going to get them up there?
Let us take those lifeboat drills, Mr. Bodie. You've heard questions to the effect that lifeboat muster drills numbered 13 in the first 26 weeks of 1988. As Occidental's offshore safety superintendent, you must have been aware that you were falling short by 50% of the regularity required. Are those figures correct?
Yes.
What steps did you take on appreciating that figure?
Well, when I'm talking to the boys or my staff, or when I'm checking the monthly activity reports, I would also establish why certain of these drills have not taken place. I know the situation they have with muster drills, and they are a weather-dependent item. We have to look so far as muster drills are concerned and say we will try to have them every week. If the weather is against us, I cannot see what we can do about that.
Would you not think, for instance, of having a muster drill at a different day and a different time from that at which it had been scheduled to take place?
No, the total disruption to the platform, if you start doing these things outside the times that are normal for them, is pretty horrendous.
Could you just elaborate a little on that answer, Mr. Bodie?
My experience of having these drills on the platform is that it is a very traumatic business for everyone to get up in the accommodation, break their work cycles, and have them coming to the lifeboats and carrying out a drill. It's a 24-hour operation. There are some people going to bed, some people getting up, some people have to stay up late to go to these drills. We do have to plan them to a certain extent so that we do not actually create more hazards by having these drills.
On board the platform, conditions must have been, by this stage, almost beyond description. A large number of people apparently made no attempt to leave the accommodation. From the evidence, it appears there were a number of reasons for this. Some waited in the hope of a helicopter coming. Some stayed because they'd been told to wait there and receive no other instruction. Some would not have remained there if they had known the full gravity of the situation. Others remained because they simply did not know what else to do. There was no systematic attempt to lead the men to a means of escape from the accommodation.
Occidental Emergency Response Centre.
Grampian Police here, Chief Inspector Gordon.
Mr. Gordon, yes, your sergeant's here. Would you like to have...
While I've got you on, just... Well, any more news?
Not much. My understanding, at least that's what I've been told, is we're looking at a diving accident of some sort.
A diving accident? Are you sure? I mean, according to the...
Well, look, that's what I understand, but information's a bit thin on the ground, I'm afraid.
According to the Coast Guard, there are six helicopters on their way, and a Nimrod. They've scrambled the Nimrod, apparently.
Well, you know, maybe that's a wise precaution. I mean, we just don't know at the moment. Perhaps you'd be kind enough to keep us informed if there's any further particulars from the Coast Guard. Now, would you like to speak to your sergeant?
On board the Silver Pit, Ed Punchard and some of the other divers who were amongst the first to be rescued are helping get the injured down into the cabins.
It's crazy down there.
It's crazy up here, mate.
This is the bloody standby vessel, isn't it? There are men down there in agony with their burns, and we can't even get them into a cabin. There's bulkheads and stairs. It's just bloody ridiculous.
It's all ridiculous. I mean, look at it. It's unreal.
Your medic's a bit overwhelmed down there.
How could you ever expect anything like this?
Are they still finding men alive?
A few, but they're having trouble seeing them. The bloke that just went down below said he'd been shouting for 20 minutes.
Shouting? Maybe we could hear someone. I mean, someone shouting for help. Get the skipper to cut the engines for a bit.
Worth a try.
15 minutes after being pushed into the sea just after the explosion of the MCP-01 riser, Michael Jennings is still in the water.
Did you notice anything about the temperature of the water?
It was warm, which surprised me.
Were you attempting to swim at this stage, or just drift?
I just laid there for a while, thinking how nice it was to be away from it all. Then I realised I was drifting, and drifting in the wrong direction towards the platform. I started swimming away from it. I tried turning over on my front, thinking I wasn't getting far enough on my back, which I now know you shouldn't do. I took a few mouthfuls of water and decided to go on my back again. While I was on my front, I noticed the Silver Pit out towards the south of the platform and also quite a lot of debris floating around out there, and I swam towards that.
Did you manage to clamber onto some debris?
Yes, I did. It looked like partitions from some of the accommodation. While I was on that, there were training shoes and cigars floating by, so I could only assume that was from the accommodation on the west side where the bond was.
By 12 minutes past 11, the Tharos' shuttle helicopter is in the air again.
My God!
Look, at no chance anyone left in there. If only we could get in.
It will be suicide. Golf Yankee Bravo to Tharos.
Tharos receiving you, Golf Yankee Bravo. What can you see?
The whole Piper Alpha platform is totally engulfed in flames. We can hardly see anything but flames. Just fire everywhere.
Mr. Richards, you are what is known as the back-to-back OIM on Piper Alpha, I believe.
That's right. Colin Seaton and I alternated as offshore installation manager. That's correct.
The most senior representative of Occidental on the platform. When you're on duty, of course.
Yes, I was.
Had it occurred to you as OIM on Piper that Piper was, as it were, at the centre of the network of platforms?
Yes.
And that a great deal of hydrocarbons from other platforms were routed through Piper?
Yes.
And that they might contribute to any fire which occurred in Piper?
Yes.
And that they might be damaged in such a way as to release their contents in the event of an explosion on Piper?
We never envisaged the scenario that happened.
Had you considered the fact that Piper was not only the centre of the hydrocarbon chain, but was also the centre of the communication chain?
Yes, I was aware of that. I knew that Claymore and Tharos had satellite phones as backup, plus the radio.
Had it occurred to you that if Piper was knocked out from the point of view of communications, in an emergency, that would impose severe difficulties on the other platforms?
It would have imposed difficulties, yes.
Had it occurred to you that that was so?
It went through my mind.
What, if anything, was done about it by you?
Nothing.
Had you considered the carrying out of any exercises which involved the scenario that Piper was knocked out in order that the responses and reactions from the other platforms might be tested?
No. We did not.
Take it easy there. These men are in a bad way.
Okay, drop your end. Swing round a bit. No, to the right.
Get them down below and I'll be down as soon as I can.
On board the Silver Pit, survivors are arriving in an increasingly bad state, many of them now suffering from severe burns.
We need some morphine.
I said I'll be down as soon as I can. I'm almost done on the bow thruster.
There's a man here with the top of his head burned off.
I'm okay.
He's going to have pain relief or iodine or something.
I said I'll be there. I have to go to the engine room.
Okay, just get me a fag.
Where's the medic? Who's the medic round here?
Me. I'm the medical officer.
I thought you were the engineer.
Second engineer and the medic.
Can you give us some idea, Mr. Carson, of what sort of medical training you yourself had?
That's the Department of Trade medical course.
And what sort of course is that? How long does it last, for example?
It's a very hectic 2-day course with the Maritime Rescue Services in Aberdeen. That was 2 years ago.
In addition to that course, have you also completed a course that is Department of Transport approved? In relation to rescue ships' crew members?
Yes, it's the Care of Survivors course.
Looking back on it now, do you feel that the ship was sufficiently supplied with medication to take care of survivors who came on board?
No.
In particular, what deficiencies in medication were there?
There were two areas in that evening that were not supplied for. One was bandages sufficiently large enough to cover a large burn area. Also some method of pain killing.
Was there morphine on board?
I believe there is morphine carried on board.
Did you have the authority to administer that to survivors?
No, I did not.
Was there any form of analgesic or distalgesic that was available to survivors?
Yes, I had some of my own. They were from a previous trip where I had dislocated a shoulder.
These were all that was available, in fact, for distribution to persons in pain?
As far as I can remember, yes.
Did you have some problem with the fact that the medication and bottles of medicine of various types were described by numbers rather than by names?
Yes, that's correct. The medication on board the Silver Pit had numbers on the labels, rather than what the bottles contained, and the note was to refer to the ship's captain.
In order to find out what was inside each bottle, you had to go to the captain, who was no doubt busy on the bridge, and look up some sort of log. Is that right?
You had to wait instructions. Yes.
Coast Guard for you, sir.
Thanks. Chief Inspector Gordon? I see. Yes, of course. No, not yet. And fatalities. Are there any reports of fatalities? I see. Okay, yes. Yes, of course. Oh, I'm afraid we're going to need to get the casualty documentation teams in and down to the heliport ASAP. Looks like there may be some fatalities coming in.
No. Keep this side of the wheelhouse. The paint's blistering badly round there. Don't want any more burns, do you?
Oh, these'll do. Thanks.
Name? What's your name?
Ellington. Sorry, I think I just saw the radio room go down.
First name?
Derek. Derek Ellington. What's all this about?
37. You're number 37. I'm trying to get a list together. Names of survivors, like, picked up by the Silver Pit. Is that two L's?
Shite, look! The whole bloody thing's coming down!
Eventually, was there a further massive explosion on the platform?
There was a heap of them.
Did you see the platform begin to disintegrate?
She melted away, yes, in my opinion.
Did you see the accommodation quarters going?
Yes.
Tell us what happened to them.
Actually, the first thing, when she became just a ball of flames all over, the derrick was one of the last things to collapse to the north. And then after that, she was really just a towering inferno. You could see the north side of the thing just going into the water.
The north side just collapsed into the water?
Just slowly. It melted away.
On the tartan platform, following the call from Claymore, measures have been taken to depressurize the pipeline to Piper.
We could do with some more bloody information.
That's for sure.
Mr. Morton, we've done it. We've opened the control valve to finish depressurisation, but, well, there's nothing there.
ECV-54, you definitely opened 54.
54, yeah. It's all gone.
Gone?
Well, the pipeline's just about empty.
Bloody hell. I thought it was odd, you know, when the pressure dropped an hour ago.
Well, the pressure held up, didn't it, after that?
Well, nice horizontal line for a whole hour. How the hell can the gauge show pressure when there's nothing there?
For the last hour, the staff of Tartan have been labouring under a delusion about the position of the pressure gauge, known as PR207, monitoring the gas pipeline. Instead of monitoring the pressure of the pipeline to Piper, it's actually on the other side of ECV54, the valve they closed an hour ago.
Plummeting pressure can only mean one thing, can it not, to an experienced operations superintendent? It can only mean, can it not, the rupture of the line.
The straight line on the graph from 1020 to 1120, I thought was the pipeline pressure, because I thought that the sensing line was downstream of the ECV and not upstream, as it turned out to be. Once the ECV was shut, what I thought the straight line was the pipeline pressure. I could not explain that steep drop at the time.
Taking that slowly, though, I take it from your answer that you, the principal person who was detailed to monitor the instrumentation on which decisions would be made, were unaware that the pressure readout would be affected by shutting the valve on Tartan in the way in which it was.
Yes, I was unaware of that at the time.
Looking at the matter now, is it clear that the plummeting of the chart, which we see at around 1022, 1025, was attributable to the rupture of the Tartan riser?
Yes.
Is it clear to you now that the horizontal line, which starts at about 1025, indicates that the valve at Tartan has been shut?
Yes, and that straight line is locked-in pressure.
What was the purpose which you envisaged being served by closing the Tartan valve?
To discontinue putting gas in.
What good would that do?
That would stop the pressure from rising.
It may have stopped the pressure from rising, but the pressure was going out with enormous volume and vigour up the Tartan pipeline at that time.
I was unaware of that at the time. It only became evident at 11:20 that our pipeline had ruptured.
May I take it from that it took 60 minutes for you, in the control room of Tartan, looking across and within sight of Piper, to realise there had been gas from your pipeline which had been feeding the fire?
That is when the pressure was noticed at zero.
Am I right that it took 1 hour for that to be noticed?
We noticed that we were feeding the fire. Yes.
Thanks. Yes, okay. That's very helpful, thanks.
St. Fergus?
Yes, Gordon Mitchell at Total's gas plant.
And?
Confirming they've started to blow down the gas lines at MCP01 and Tartan.
Well, that's a relief. That's all the gas lines taken care of, isn't it?
I know, before bloody time.
Nimrod 01 to Maritime Rescue.
Maritime Rescue to Nimrod 01. Go ahead, Nimrod.
Overhead Piper field platform now.
What's the situation?
It's an absolute bloody disaster. Dense smoke and flames. Huge flames.
What's the platform status?
Virtually nothing. Main platform structure not visible above the surface. We estimate flames to be 600 feet high.
Repeat, please, Nimrod.
You heard correctly. Flames estimated at 600 feet. Looks like a really big one.
By 11:30 that evening, the collapse of the platform was almost complete. Just an hour and a half earlier, 226 men had been working, relaxing or sleeping on the platform that was their temporary home. In those 90 minutes, three-quarters of them had lost their lives. The rest had lived through a nightmare, some of them forced to jump from the height of a 17-storey building. Of those who survived, the majority did so by ignoring their training and descending towards the sea.
16 of the deceased from Piper were recovered from the surface of the sea. 38 were recovered from the seabed. And 81 were recovered from inside the accommodation. 30 persons from Piper remain missing and should be presumed to have died on the 6th of July as a result of the disaster. Two members of the crew of the Sandhaven's fast rescue craft also died. A total of 61 of the personnel of Piper survived the event. Their evidence was heard at the inquiry. In the light of that evidence, it can be seen that they escaped from the platform in the following ways. 27 descended by rope from the 68-foot level to the 20-foot level. Seven climbed down a rope or hose from the 68-foot level or a navigation platform below it and dropped into the sea. Five jumped off the 68-foot level or the platform just below. One jumped off a roof beside the drilling derrick. 15 jumped off at the level of the pipe deck, 131 feet. And five jumped off at the level of the helideck, 175 feet.
The Cullen Inquiry opened on the 19th of January 1989 and closed a year and 4 weeks later.
In my considered opinion, Occidental can have been in no doubt as to the grave consequences for the platform and its personnel in the event of a prolonged high-pressure gas fire. A memo dated the 18th of March 1988 stated that structural integrity could be lost within 10 to 15 minutes if a fire was fed from a large pressurized hydrocarbon inventory. A property loss prevention report to Occidental dated the 14th of October 1986 commented on the pipelines to and from the platform. It said, "These pipelines, especially the gas pipelines,
would take hours to depressurize because of their capacity. This could result in a high-pressure gas fire on the cellar deck that would be virtually impossible to fight, and the protection systems would not be effective in providing the cooling needed for the duration of the depressurization."
Further, in 1987, Occidental's Loss Prevention Department prepared a preliminary report which described various scenarios which could weaken the platform's structural steel support members and the means of firefighting in each case. One of these was an oil or gas riser rupture. In the case of a rupture on the pipeline side of the emergency shutdown valve, the ESV, no direct action could be taken on the platform to stem the flow of hydrocarbon. It went on to say,
"It is likely that an aerial deflagration from escaping gas or a fire on the sea from the escaping oil represents a more serious hazard to personnel and to platform abandonment plans than to the integrity of the structure itself, and this may become the major concern in such an incident."
These passages from reports to Occidental themselves could be used to describe what happened in the disaster.
Piper Alpha was performed by Ewan Bailey, Nigel Betts, Kenny Blythe and Mark Bonner, Liam Brennan, Stephen Critchlow, Ben Crowe and Nyasha Hatendi, Chris Pavlow, Roshan R. Rohatgi, John Rowe, Don Starkey, John K. Steele and Joan Walker. The play was written by Stephen Phelps and directed by Toby Swift.